WNST, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. It is a happy, happy week around here. I don't know that we've had a whole lot of weeks in late July where I'm planning a crab cake tour over at the Beaumont in Catonsville with our friends at the Maryland Lottery and Window Nation, where the Orioles are quite this in fuego, to steal Dan Patrick's line. Orioles at home later on in the week. They've been a good luck charm. Luke Jones leaves to go on vacation. They lose a lot. Thinks about coming back. They win a lot. Comes back, goes to the ballpark. They can't lose. Luke Jones joins us now. He is Baltimore Luke. He covers all things Orioles for us because they don't let me in, but they do let you in. You'll be there for the Dodgers. And certainly, the Marlins, they got off to a good start on Friday night. I thought they had really good-looking road jerseys. I know you're the fashion tweet guy here. I thought, yeah, they look good. By the end of the weekend, they devolved. Their play had devolved. And more than that, the Orioles have just moved into a different kind of position now, especially amongst these young players that now have an all-star game or two under their belt. They now have last year where they didn't make the playoffs. Now they have nothing but expectation for what the rest of this summer is, and they're making good on that. If you're coming down to the ballpark, other than that Twins series where you weren't there anyway, they gave out the shirts and rained a little bit. This was a heck of a weekend for enthusiasm, for winning, and for starting the second half by saying, we're going to play baseball in October around here. Just you wait.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what they've done since July 4th, right? You mentioned while I was away and watching Twitter and Facebook from afar and panicking
Sky
and
is
all that,
falling.
and
We need more pitching.
right, well, yeah, and we'll still talk about the pitching because we saw the ninth inning on Sunday in middle relief and seeing if they could fortify that a little bit. But boy, I mean, this is just a really good baseball team. I don't know if there's if it's too much more complex than that at this point. And we'll get into, can they win a World Series? How deep into October can they play? And you're saying that about every team. Let's be clear about that. I mean, we know that October is very largely still a crapshoot. It's more of a crapshoot than the best teams care to admit
I
every
saw the
year.
crap they shot in Kansas City with you 10 years ago.
I mean, it's just, I mean, look at all the regular season success the Dodgers, who are coming into town this week. Look at all the regular season success they have had, yet it was the weird pandemic year that they won the World Series. They've had lots of disappointment in October, despite 100-win seasons and so much success in the regular season over the last decade or so. So that's just a reminder of that. But you just look at this team and, once again, an injury concern pops up over the weekend with Cedric Mullins, some quad tightness, and looks like it's going to be a day-to-day situation, not quite as serious as the groin back on Memorial Day, but they just keep going, right? I mean, something, even if they have a couple bumps in the road, as they did right around the 4th of July when they lose 6 of 7, they reel off 8 wins in a row. And that's just the mark of a really good baseball team. And you look at their overall profile. It's funny. I was talking to someone about this over the weekend, and in congruence with this, we've seen the disappointment of the Mets, right? We've seen the disappointment that the San Diego Padres have been. I mean, you look at some of the players on those rosters, the Padres being a great example of that. You look at them on paper. You look at the Orioles on paper, recognizing that around baseball, there aren't a ton of really familiar names yet. I mean, Adley Rutschman's becoming that, right? Gunnar Henderson's becoming that. But it's still a bunch of guys that aren't necessarily household names around the league. But if I just showed you the Padres roster, showed you the Orioles roster, and then said one of those teams is 57-35, and one of those teams is, well, what the Padres record is right now, everyone would guess the Padres are the team that's 22 games over 500. And well, lo and behold, it's the Orioles, and the Orioles keep going. And with the Rays certainly having cooled off here in the month of July, they're right there with Tampa Bay for first place in the AL East. I mean, it's a fantastic story, and the Orioles, they just continue to do everything well, right? I mean, there's not anything they do that's amazing per se, but they're just doing everything well, including, by the way, recently at the very least, they're starting pitching. I mean, Kyle Bradish was outstanding on Sunday. Dean Kramer was good on Friday night. And I know Kyle Gibson wasn't great on Saturday by any stretch of the imagination, but more often than
But when
not,
they've been
they're
not great, even early, giving up three, four, five runs in the first, second, third inning, they have the wherewithal to get back in a game. Now, they almost blew it on Sunday, almost went the other way, but it didn't. And they won, and it's fine, and, you know, the sky's not falling. But when Gibson puts up crooked numbers in the first, second inning, gets banged around the way he did, the fact that you're like, hey, we're losing 4-0, we're losing 3-0, we're losing 5, whatever it is, it's third inning, second inning. We'll get two here. Henderson will hit one. Santander will hit one. You know, we'll be back in the game. We'll have a chance to win. We can give ourselves a chance to win even when we're behind by 4 or 5 runs. That's they have an offense that can dig out. Now, they also have an offense that can go stone cold. You know, that's happened too. But not on most nights. And I think moving the fence back is also an issue. I saw they were showing how Henderson has spread all of his home runs all over the place. I'm thinking, you probably like got three of them caught up in that left field warning track now that they moved it back so far this year. I don't know how many. Somebody out there, Heist, somebody out there is keeping track of exactly how many that is. But this team's even adjusted to the ballpark in that way. I mean, they spray more. They hit the ball well. I every night I get one or two of them. Dude, you're in the locker room with her every day, right? Like, so to me, they're all complete strangers to me other than Brian Ebel. So if you see Brian, give him my love. Tell him I don't like seeing him because when he comes out, it means somebody's hurt. But I saw him the other day again, and he's the OG. He's the guy I would walk back in there. I see that they've painted the locker rooms. Everything's different about the whole place. And Lock and Four is there doing his thing in front of the Oriole logo and all that. And I'm thinking, the only one I would know is Ebel. So I don't know any of these guys, but hearing their voices, hearing what they talk about, hearing what they talk to Melanie Newman about or Rob Long about, whoever they're talking to, that's my only chance to really hear or see from them. And they're a likable bunch, much more likable than the guys I was around 25 years ago, even on TV. It just seems like a humble young group of guys. And I think back to like 12 and 14 and 16 and the players we had, and you know, where Machado was, and that where Adley Rutschman is, where Matt Wieters is, and where, you know, all these guys were supposed to be. And then you look at, you know, Kowser struggling a little bit coming up. I mean, he's a phenom. He's a number 5 overall pick. He's going to be fine. He's made it this far. Rodriguez coming back up. I think he's going to be fine. You have to explain to me how a guy can be that good and then fail. I don't talk Rocky Coppinger. I mean, a couple of guys maybe over the course of time that have been that good and they hit their nose when they get to the big leagues. But I look at even Austin Hayes getting some seasoning last week. I look at Santander as almost like a Nelson Cruz. You know what I mean? Like, not as accomplished, not where, but he's playing like that now. And in regard to this team, I keep wondering, who's the veteran presence here? Who's the Rick Sutcliffe on this team? Who's the veteran pitcher? And when he gets banged up, he still hangs in and it shows you the moxie to make it through. And then Bradish. I mean, you were all over him a year and a half ago when he came up as thinking, he's a maybe, but he's not a Grayson Rodriguez. It certainly wasn't his herald that is even a DLR, right? But he's come up, he's made it, and now you give him the ball on a Sunday and doing a special thing out there on Sunday. I mean, I sat at Costas eating crabs with Chris Pike on Sunday and watching him and saying, 2 hits, 3 hits, how many hits? And then in the end, they had to fight. But he did, that was as good as, that was a Palmer kind of start, dude. It was crazy.
It was an excellent start, especially with the backdrop of what you just mentioned. They had the issues late in the game, specifically the ninth inning. Well, that's because Felix Bautista and Yennier Cano had pitched on Friday and Saturday. They weren't available Sunday. So you're going into a start like that. You've already got a series win under your belt, so it's not like the pressure is immense, but you're going for the sweep, and you know that your two best guys in the bullpen are most likely down. You know, I'm not saying that Chris Holt and Brandon Hyde are saying that to Kyle Bradish before the game, but he knows how it works. They're generally not going to pitch relievers 3 days in a row. So you see that. You know that your bullpen's a little bit limited on Sunday compared to the two previous days. He goes out there and hangs 7 1/3 scoreless innings on a team that has been good, mind you. I mean, the Miami Marlins have been one of the better stories in the league, like the Orioles have been, as far as how well they played this year. So for him to do what he did, and really this started – the second half of last year, right? I mean, he came up early last year and he struggled. Yeah, he had the IL stint, comes back, and he pitched very, very well down the stretch last year. He was absolutely one of, not just one of their best pitchers the final 2 months last year, but go look at where he stacked up in the American League. I mean, you'd be surprised with just how well he pitched over the final 2 months. And you know, he had the took the line drive off his foot in his first start down in Texas this year. So he had the brief IL stint there, but he's just been outstanding. I mean, he's got a 3.05 ERA. That plays in any era, right? I mean, I'm not saying that that's Cy Young-esque in any era, but that's it's really good. And for him to do what he did on Sunday, knowing their bullpen was short, and we saw how that played out in the ninth inning, unfortunately, and they almost blew it. But
are you ready for him to be the ace if he has three or four? I mean, of all the guys in the class, if at the end of the year he's their best pitcher, which right now it's hard to make that argument, right? I mean, we're waiting on Rodriguez. We're waiting. That's the one thing about this team being good. They don't have Maddox, Clemens, and Messina. You know what I mean? Like, this is not how they're built. And the thing that we all bitch about is we need more pitching. We need more pitching. Well, if he takes the ball every fifth day, and if Rodriguez takes the ball, I mean, how much you need bullpen maybe, but as far as going and getting another front-end starter, guys are starting to emerge as being, I don't know if reliable, but being efficient, if nothing else. He was definitely efficient.
Yeah, no question about it. And I also want to give some love to Tyler Wells, who's also pitched really well this year. Long ball's been an issue, but typically when he gives up home runs, they're solo shots. You can live with that. Jim Palmer's even said you can live with that. You know, you don't want to give up the three-run shot. You don't want to give up the grand slam type situations, of course. But Tyler Wells, he's got a 3.18 ERA. And, you know, they moved him back out of this all-star break to kind of manage his innings a little bit. Keep in mind, now this is a former Rule 5 pick and was in the bullpen his first year with the Orioles. And then last year, they really had to manage his innings and had some injuries in the second half of the season. But, you know, no one's going to sit here and look at the Orioles starting rotation right now and say that it's the best in baseball or stacks up with the best in baseball per se. But what you have gotten from Bradish, what you've gotten from Tyler Wells, you know, Kyle, you asked me who the Rick Sutcliffe of the staff is. I mean, it's Kyle Gibson. He's the guy who's in his mid 30s. I mean, no, his numbers aren't great. He certainly wasn't great on Saturday. He'd be the first to tell you that. But he's the guy that provides that veteran leadership. He's the guy that posts up. I mean, he's made 20 starts for them this year. You know, he's averaged almost six innings per start, which I know doesn't sound great to old timers, but in modern baseball, that's, you know, about what you're looking for out of most guys.
Well,
that
if you're
aren't
talking about
aces,
going and getting other starting pitching, who are you bouncing here?
Well, and that's well,
he's sort of the worst of the bunch. I mean, like on every fifth day, I mean, that's what I was saying about the leader. He's the leader, but he's the worst pitcher, I think.
Well, I mean, Kramer's had some inconsistency, but we've also seen Kramer be really good on. Look, let's be clear about this. Their rotation has provided a higher floor to their success than I might have anticipated. That said, and this isn't even getting into what it would take to go acquire a top-of-the-line starting pitcher, what prospects they would have to give up, what kind of impact that incoming arm would make, which, hey, trade deadline deals don't always work out exactly as you hope, you know, I mean, that's certain, but the point is, especially, and we'll get into talking about Grayson Rodriguez a little more specifically, but you know, what they've gotten from their rotation. Yeah. Could you bring someone else in and even move one of those arms to a long slash middle relief role and maybe fortify your bullpen that way? Sure. You absolutely could do something along those lines, but they have gone out there and for the most part, and Brandon Hyde talked about this on Friday when they came out of the All-Star break. When they get good starting pitching, this team's really, really tough to beat. I mean, it just is. And again, it's not that it has to be great, but when it's been steady, when they're getting into the sixth inning, you know, when they're getting through six innings, when they're pitching into the seventh inning, you know, that's when they're really, really difficult to beat. As long as they're not having an outing where they're knocked out in the fourth and then you're having to go through your bullpen, that they've been very, very difficult to beat when they've done that. And they've just offered, like I said, it hasn't been a crazy high ceiling from their rotation, but I feel like as the year has gone on, they've provided a higher floor. You know, there've been fewer of those starts where you say that wasn't very competitive. I mean, even Kyle Gibson on Saturday, which, you know, was not a great start and got off to, you know, that second inning was, you know, kind of Kansas City Royals-esque where the Marlins just poked the ball around and it found grass. But he still found a way to keep them in the ball game and give them a chance to come back as they ultimately did in the late innings. So, you know, that's what's exciting about this club in the sense that, you know, it feels like even their weaknesses that weak at this point in time. And that, you know, that's kind of a, sounds like a backhanded compliment there, but I mean that as, you know, praise for them that even the things that they don't do as well, they found ways to be able to minimize that, to mitigate that, and still give themselves a great chance to win every single night of the week. So again, it's just a it's a really good team, and we'll see if they can continue to do that. The certainly a lot of tough competition, and the Dodgers coming in this week as, you know, maybe not the same level of dominance as we've seen of the Dodgers in some recent years, but they're still really good. So, you know, the challenge, you know, it continues. You know, the Marlins leave and the Dodgers come in, and then the Orioles will go on the road and face tough competition, you know, coming up here with Tampa Bay and the Phillies, who are playing good baseball, just took a series from the Padres. So, you know, it doesn't get any easier, but, you know, you just get the sense. And you know, you mentioned Colton Cowser, you know, Jordan Westberg's come up. You know, they've got a team that, you mentioned it, they've got some, you know, I think you mentioned the term humble. I don't even know if I'd say they're humble. I think they're confident. I think they're very confident, but they carry themselves in a way that allows them to be even keeled, that even when they lose 6 of 7, you know, the week before the All-Star break, no panic there. They regroup, they win 5 in a row, they go into the break, and then they come out and sweep a series against one of the better teams in the National League. It's just, it's really impressive. And, you know, we've been saying this going back to the second half of last year. It's really fun to watch.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Luke is at the ballpark. The Orioles are home for a couple more days. Afternoon game on Wednesday, and then off this weekend. And, they're going to play Sunday Night Baseball now against the Yankees a couple weeks from now. They're starting to get those kinds of assignments as well. You know, for you with the Mullins thing and him getting that would be the derailment for me. It would be bad luck and guys getting injured. You mentioned Bradish taking the line drive off the foot to start the season. You know, they've managed through some of these injuries and some of these problems and some health concerns and stuff like that. As far as depth and as far as where they are 2 weeks from now for a trading deadline, how are you feeling about this? Because the Rodriguez call up, and we'll talk about that and talk about him in its own situation as to whether they need the trade or not. Right. I don't know if he comes up, makes 2 or 3 decent starts. Do you feel better about that? That is the spot holder in that rotation? Or, I mean, they're, you know, Bruce Zimmerman's a part of this a couple weeks ago. So, you know, they've got the shuttle back and forth with what they do. But to your point, do you want to wake up? And they're not going to deal Holiday. They're not going to deal any of the guys that are at the footstep of making the big leagues, I don't believe, unless there was something really. But I don't feel like they need to make magic happen at the trading deadline. I don't feel like they need to get a shining star and put him into the rotation at $30 million a year and another year left and giving away half the farm. I don't feel like it's a desperate situation here to fortify or to win a World Series. And I almost feel like if this team went into the playoffs as is and all they add is a relief pitcher, and I say that all that they add, that could be Andrew Miller in the old days, which was a big, big ad. But if they add a relief pitcher to this and where they are with the fortification of what they have and they get bounced in the second round of the playoffs or make it, I don't have hard feelings that they didn't go all in to, especially not this year, to, and people I talk to on the street, they're all like, he's got a trade. Yeah. And I'm like, man, I've been watching baseball a long time. If you want this to last as long as we think it's going to last, especially with a cheap owner and limited budget, you know, we're going to hear a limited budget around here. No lease. I have to bring that up every segment because it's real, but I'm not going to be the mad one at the end of the year. If they don't, I'm not going to be the one pounding on the table for the Chris Widger trade, you know, not this time around. I'm just not.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think that's reasonable. I mean, I'll say this, and I was even talking about this on Twitter just with a few Orioles fans over the course of the last few days. You just said it. Look, in an ideal world, if you tell me the Orioles could go out there and get hypothetical ace or hypothetical number two starting pitcher, you know, someone that would fit into the top of their rotation, you know, either in the top spot, the second spot, whatever, you know, as you mentioned, of Bradish pitching so well, everything that's transpiring with Tyler Wells. And if you can tell me they can do that and not have to give up an extraordinary haul of prospects, God bless. Great. You know, I'm all for that. But I also know how pitching is valued in baseball.
At the trading deadline.
And there's also, you know, how, you know, again, is it a true ace or is it just someone that you say is good that's going to kind of slot in somewhere with Bradish and Tyler Wells? And, you know, we'll see about Grayson Rodriguez and all that. But how much do you have to give up to get that? And how much of an impact is that individual going to make over the final 2 months compared to what they already have in place?
See, I don't care about impact in the last 2 months. They're going to make the playoffs, right? I mean, we're not thinking they're going to backtrack from 22 games over 500. Like, they're going to make the playoffs, so they don't need a push. They're basically buying an arm for October is really all they're buying. Like, maybe they'll win the division, maybe, and if that's where your mind is, we have to win the division, and there's big benefits to that, right, in regard to you're surviving October by winning the division. But that's a different argument than can we make the playoffs and will we be good enough to not fall on our face in October. I mean, they might fall on their face, they might not, but I'm not convinced that giving away the minor league system is the answer in the first year of we haven't even made the playoffs yet. Let's not get all desperate. It's like, last week I'm here and I got guys, Rosenfeld's on the air. We got to sign Rutschman. We got to sign him long. I mean, like, he's got here. Relax. You're just, you know, that's not going to satiate me as a fan, you know?
Yeah, although I will say, showing a long-term commitment to one of their young guys, and for me, I'd probably
go.
Be more inclined
to
say,
on it,
sign
are you?
Gunnar Henderson.
You're going to pile on.
I'm just saying that as a 22-year-old, you know, and I don't think he's going to be a shortstop long-term just because of Jackson Holliday, but clearly what he is, he would be the guy that I would target. But that aside, because that's not impacting what
well,
they do in
October,
per se.
Well, then you piss everybody off. You give money to one guy and not the other, right?
I think a lot of people would be happy to sign Gunnar Henderson, even if it's, you know, even if Adley Rutsch, you know, one or the other, I think people would be happy either way. But the point I was trying to make, I mean, you look at the rotation, could they use an ace? Of course, everyone could use another ace, right? I mean, we've seen that over and over, but it's very expensive in terms of what you have to give up to get that. You know, so what are the consequences for you long-term in terms of what assets? I mean, you know very well, and, you know, there were some rumors over the weekend about the Angels and Shohei Ohtani, and, you know, and Orioles fans are doing what every other fan base is doing right now. You dream for a moment, right? And I mean, can you imagine what the Angels would ask for a rental of Shohei Ohtani? They're starting with Jackson Holliday, who, by the way, is already hitting and already gaining some notoriety at Double A Bowie at age 19. I mean, this kid's unbelievable the way it's looking. I mean, it really is. So you're not giving up someone like him. I mean, you're just not. I don't think there's anyone they would give up Jackson Holliday for at this point in time. But the point is, it's going to cost a heck of a lot in terms of prospects to go get that starting pitcher. Does that mean that there isn't a deal that isn't out there that would make sense for them? Sure, it could. However, what I would be much more inclined to do, and I don't want to just see them stand pat at the trade deadline, I would like to see them go out there and fortify the bullpen a little bit. If you can go get a bullpen arm that you can kind of, you know, if you're talking about your pecking order, right? Got Felix Bautista at the very top. He's your closer, your all-star closer. If you can get someone else, and it's a deal that makes sense, you're certainly not giving up Jackson Holliday. You know, you're not giving up Grayson Rodriguez. You're not giving up anything crazy. But go get a bullpen arm that you can kind of say is, you know, kind of comparable to what Yennier Cano has been able to do for you. And I don't mean Cano over the first month, but the body of work. You know, that you mentioned Andrew Miller, you know, that kind of an acquisition that the Orioles could make and kind of have that third stud in the bullpen. And then that allows you to pick your spots a little more with Brian Baker. It allows you to pick your spots a little more with Danny Coulomb. It allows you to pick your spots a little more with Mike Bauman, who was big for them on Saturday in their comeback win. Then I think that changes the complexion of your bullpen, where you're not quite as uneasy about the middle relief. And I think it just, you know, it just allows you to shorten the game that much more with your starting pitchers, who, typically speaking, you know, what Bradish did on Sunday hasn't been the norm for them. You know, that's the first time they've had a starter go longer than 7 innings all year long. And a lot of that's by design in today's game. Let's be clear about that. So, you know, if you can do that, and that's something that seems far more reasonable to be able to do than whatever you're going to have to give up to go get a starting pitcher, I'd be much more inclined to do that. I certainly don't want to see them squander this because I've said it over and over, talking about the Ravens a lot. You know, in 2019, 14-2, all the Pro Bowlers, Lamar Jackson, unbelievable season. They lose to the Titans in the playoffs, and everyone thought, well, they were ahead of schedule. We've seen what's happened since then. It's not, winning isn't linear, right? These rebuilding 5-year plans, yeah, on paper, it sounds great to say that it's a gradual progression every year, but we know it doesn't always work out that way. You know, Brian Billick be the first to tell you what a Super Bowl in his second year, and he said it at the time, they'll just run me out of town sooner. Yeah, I mean, it's
Cal Ripken
how
would
it
be the guy,
works.
right?
So,
I mean, you know.
no doubt, absolutely. So, and that's not to say that, you know, that it won't be really special for 6, 7, maybe 8 years, maybe longer than that, if they continue to draft and develop well. But the only thing that's guaranteed is the opportunity you have before you right now. And that's where I do look at this team and say, yeah, if the right deal's there that makes sense, absolutely pull the trigger on that. And, you know, you're not going to trade Jackson Holliday, but are you willing to part with, say, a Joey Ortiz, who's a top 100 prospect around baseball, had a cup of coffee so far with the Orioles, but hasn't really found his footing in the major leagues at this point? Could that be a piece along with, you know, a couple other guys that could go get you, a stud bullpen arm to add to what you have? If that's the case, you know, I'm considering that at the very least, you know? So I certainly want to see Mike Elias, you know, leave no stone unturned in exploring what they can do to improve this team. But to your point, I don't think they need to do that just to get to the playoffs. I'm talking about doing that to make them even more formidable, even more dangerous come October. So, you know, and we'll see how this plays out. So, I mean, again, part of it, so much of it, not part of it, a big part of it is what they have internally. We'll see Grayson Rodriguez this week. We still might see Heston Kerstad before the year is out, even though they've already have a crowded outfield situation. But they have options, and they have options at AAA right now. So, yeah, the trade deadline talk is sexy, and we'll continue to talk about it. And who knows? Maybe they will go out and get a stud starting pitcher. But there are different ways for this team to improve, including some internal options. And in the meantime, oh yeah, they still are one of the best teams in baseball, and they finished the weekend against the Marlins one game out of first place. And you know, what more can you ask for a team that just a couple years ago was still the worst team in baseball?
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. And together we're going to be covering things out on Twitter. We're out on social media. Luke's going to be at the ballpark. Dodgers in town. It's like the 66 World Series. I have to break out my old stuff there as well. And of course, Ravens beginning, oh, less than 2 weeks from now. So Luke will have his eyes on that toward the end of next week as well. You can reach me, Ness, at BaltimorePositive.com. I'm wearing my El Guapo shirt on the air here for Catonsville today. We're not doing the show at El Guapo on Thursday. We're going to be at the Beaumont on Thursday. Got some great guests coming out. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Win Donation. Had a $100 winner last week, so I was very, very excited about that. We took the show out on the road on Thursday to Coco's, and it was fantastic. Coco's is coming on as a sponsor now, so give some love to Marcella over there. Make sure you're taking advantage of those specials. I had a 3 crab caker. It was only 1 crab cake, but it took me 3 sittings to eat it over the weekend when I got back from Coco's and the Jamaican jerk chicken that Marcella sent me home with. Great conversations over there as well with Senator Corey McRae from the 45th, as well as an unbelievable baseball conversation with Dave Shinen from the Washington Post and my dear pal, Mike Rossigliano. We went a little overtime on baseball and rock and roll. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Grayson Rodriguez in Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.